Oh, so excited. So keen. Keen as a green bean.
Me too. I'm keen to not advertise, but if we do, I will advertise for Dash Sparkling Water if they can keep me plugged in with the cucumber.
Oh, 100%. 100%.
That's the best thing this country's ever produced.
The amount of stores we've gone to find cucumber Dash.
I mean, you know, people are entitled to their sexual proclivities. You know, I mean, let there be 1,000 blossoms bloom. But I ain't spending any time on it.
Hi, everyone. Hey. Hi. Hi, Karen.
Hi, Yanni.
You excited to learn about the other catters?
I'm actually so excited. I'm so, 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 so keen.
I'm just going to get into this episode because I wrote an intro for once.
Oh my God, okay. I'm very excited, please.
Yeah, well, it struck me as I was writing this that Bob Catter might be the Australian politician with the widest global recognition ever.
I have influence.
This, in a classic sports fan way, is a tortured argument with contrived goalposts, but hear me out.
Okay.
Australia simply hasn't had that many globally recognizable politicians because... why would anyone globally really be thinking about us?
No, like, especially our politics. I mean, if they're thinking about us, they're thinking about beaches and, you know, little deadly critters and,
sports.
You know, sports.
Yeah, and I think...
A Hemsworth, maybe.
You know, like, Bob Catter's recognition is nowhere near a Hemsworth.
Give us a break. Give us a fair go. Because if you don't, you will break your country.
But I think more people have seen that clip of Bob Catter talking about crocodiles in the context that he's an Australian politician. And it aligns enough with the rest of their images of Australians that it sticks in their mind.
Yes, absolutely.
I've heard all manner of people be like, around the world, like, oh, that like Australian cowboy with the crocodiles and the gays.
And it's like, yep, yeah, yeah, that's the one. The one who talks about flowers? Yeah, yeah, no, he's one of ours.
Yeah, if you don't know... he's the guy in the theme song from the meme. He's also Australia's longest-serving active politician, so he's the father of the house. He's the papa of the casa.
Papa Qatar.
But he's been in the House of Representatives since the 13th of March, 1993, which is before either of us were born.
Holy shit.
His career is... I am so sweaty. I'm going to get, like, a towel, okay?
Yeah. So Yanni is going to go grab a nice wet towel to freshen herself up. I'm going to sit here and I'm going to be a dude about it. And I'm going to tough it out and be like, oh yeah, sweat. That's nature's cooling. Don't even worry about it. Oh, it wasn't even a wet towel. She's just using it to dry herself off.
Yeah. I'm just covered in sweat.
You know, fellas, if your girl ain't this wet, you're doing something wrong.
Jesus Christ.
Absolutely 1000%. I support everything he said. It was a magnificent speech. It was
Bob
solid.
And his Akubra loom large over this podcast and the country. To get the interpersonal stuff out of the way, he's a bigot. He's pretty vehement in his consistent hatred against like the queers in all varieties. Like he doesn't like us.
Every flavor.
Yeah, and he's not a fan of abortion, but he is a fan of Western chauvinism, which is like way worse, way scarier.
We'll thresh and lash them. We'll bash and mash them.
But he is also like really popular in his home electorate. I mean, like I said, he's been elected like 10 times.
Yeah, if he's been serving like as a politician since 93.
Yeah.
That's fucked.
Like he's been serving since 6 years before... anyone heard of Britney Spears?
That's so fucked.
Like,
you can't just culturally put stuff like that out there. Now I have to reconcile that mentally.
Well, 1993, like there hasn't been a Toy Story movie.
Stop it.
I don't think there's even been a Bug's Life.
Stop.
So, yeah, he's very popular in his home electorate. And in a great example of how words can mean different things to different people, he describes himself as a far left agrarian socialist. It is a thing that is... less untrue than it sounds, but I want to assure you it's still mostly, like, not true.
I guess he's, what, like, a socialist in terms of a agriculture and, you know, community land-based shit.
Or yeah, there's like, definitely
certainly
that.
Not from a
and also for
lefty.
It's socialist without environmentalism.
That is an interesting take.
Is a way to put it. He wants everyone to profit from the mines, I guess, is a way to put it.
Yeah, fair enough.
But we're not actually really going to talk about our Bob Catter much more today. Not just because I have a lot of reading to do on that man's career. He is a published author, so it's going to be a long
time. You've
got
some books to read.
I got some books to read. But I don't think I could honestly talk about Bob Catter and what it is that makes the Catter name a dynasty without going to North Queensland and meeting the man. Because if you're the kind of emotionally stupid person like me, and you take people at face value and with toxic generosity, you're probably going to fall under a spell.
That I'm a Martian astronaut. Well, 4 weeks later, he's thrown out a window.
Because whenever I see people or hear about people, usually, not always, but usually men, who spend some time with him, they seem to really enjoy themselves. Like, even the people that hate him seem to kind of like him.
Yeah, I mean, I fall into that category a bit. I've never met Bob Catter, and I disagree with basically everything he stands for.
He hates us.
He hates us. Like, I'm sure he would shoot me in the street if he could. But what a funny little fucker.
Yeah.
What an odd person. And the fact that this is an incredibly long-serving politician, somebody with power in this country, is so laughable. You have to laugh.
You do
That's
have
insane.
To laugh.
It's like you've elected the Grinch to office.
Didn't pagan rituals sacrifice children to the tree and crocodile gods?
Like, that's what? I mean, yeah, sure. He's probably got pretty bad policies, you know. He's probably got pretty... I mean, actually, the Grinch might have good policies.
What do you think the Grinch is
Does the Grinch have lesbian mums? Is like, that the canon?
The Grinch himself?
Yeah.
What?
LBGTs, whatever the hell the words are.
Okay, maybe I made
that up.
I thought
the Grinch just was in a cave.
Yeah, but like when he was a baby.
Is
like,
that in the canon?
I don't know.
It's baby Grinch? I don't think.
Yeah, no, there's definitely images of baby Grinch.
Dr. Seuss didn't.
Okay, well, I'm talking about the Grinch movie.
I am too. I'm usually talking about the Grinch movie.
Anyway, yeah, if you elect the Grinch, you kind of have to have a bit of a laugh sometimes because you're like, oh, wow, we elected the Grinch.
We elected the Grinch. And no, I actually, he's not quite the Grinch. He does have a lot to offer the people who vote for him.
And I'm sure the Grinch does too.
Who's voting for the Grinch?
People who like his policies.
All right, Karen. We're going to, and that's why we're going to do the classic Australian thing. We are going to talk around the problem. We're going to talk about Bob's grandfather, Carl, his father, also Bob, his son, also Bob, and his brother, also Carl. And we're going to read some poetry.
Okay, so this is our Bob Catter, flowers bloom, crocodile, eat man. No time wasted.
Yes.
This is his father.
Yes.
His grandfather.
And we're going to start with his grandfather.
His brother.
Yes.
And his son.
Yes.
All right.
But also, we're going to read a poem.
There are those who migrate with nothing but courage in their hearts and strength in their arms, but who return with wealth in their hands and a wreath of glory upon their heads. They are the victorious wherever they go, and loved and respected wherever they settle. These are the ones born in huts, but who died in palaces of learning. These are the children of Lebanon. They are the lamps that cannot be snuffed by the wind and the salt, which remains unspoiled through the ages. Oh, that was very nice.
Yes, that is an excerpt from the translation of Lebanese-American poet Khalil Gibran's work, You Have Your Lebanon and I Have My Lebanon. Gibran was a Maronite Christian, part of a community of Christians with descent from modern-day Syria, with a somewhat Hellenized, that is, Greekified culture, and their presence in modern-day Lebanon dates back to something like 400 AD. By the 1800s, Maronite scholars and poets were a significant part of the Arab Awakening, that's how it's described. I'm sure all these Arabs were awake already, known as the Nahda, which I've said wrong. The Nahda is seen to have come out of a period of significant political reform in the Ottoman Empire and a reaction to recent invasions, specifically Napoleon's jaunt into Egypt.
Ah.
We're talking a while ago.
Yeah.
It's also an outcome of an increasingly connected world, with Arabic-speaking writers from the Levant moving to the Western world and forming diasporic communities. This is known as the Mahjar. Gibran, for instance, led a large group of riders in New York known as the Penn League in the 1920s. The Penn 15 League.
I was about to be like, wow, the Penn League sounds sick. And now I'm like, oh, yeah.
Well, he led the
You want to join the Penn 15 club?
No, you're in the Penn League and he's Penn 14.
Oh, shit. Penis!
You having fun?
That's a two-paragraph summary of way too much history. I don't have an exact, you're not going to learn any more about Maronites. I don't have an exact number for the Maronite Christian population at the time, but in 1921, there's about 200,000 still living in Lebanon. We have that census.
Okay.
Though the British and American communities of Maronites are pretty large, some of them have come to Australia. One of them is apparently one of Khalil Gibran's cousins, Carlisle Assad Kittar. Born in the 1880s, he comes to Australia around the age of 18, and by 1905, he's applying for Australian citizenship. The application is for a Carl Robert Katter. So, born in Bosri, now Bishari, in northern Lebanon, one of the centers of the Maronite community. Bishari Maronites are known for their distinct accent, which reflects their status as one of the last Aramaic-speaking communities. Just liturgically, it seems at this point, but still people speak Aramaic, which is like a language that, you know, a lot of languages of the Arab world and the Levant descend from. It's, I think, a early Semitic language.
I was gonna say, I feel like Aramaic is like, you know, like a biblical time.
It's what Jesus spoke.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're one of the last communities who have like a community of people who speaks a language very similar to the language Jesus spoke.
Yeah. Damn, and that's crazy.
Not a linguist, so I don't know much about that. They're also known for Christianity. It is the home of the largest church in the Levant, and it's very much in Lebanon, in modern Lebanon, but Lebanon. He calls it Syria at the time. And because of that, Carl was denied citizenship in 1905.
Oh, shit.
As we covered in the Sugar Slaves episode, any Aboriginal native of Asia, Africa, or the islands of the Pacific was disqualified automatically.
Yeah.
And Syria is popularly understood to be a part of Asia, and so Carl is denied.
Okay, so they're just like, not Asian.
Exactly. So 2 years later, he tries again. There's a couple of changes. One of them is, for whatever reason, the use of his birth name. So he hasn't been using the Carlisle Kittar name in Australia at all, but I'm sure there's some justification. The other is in his place of birth, which he's now reporting as Edirne, Turkey in Europe.
Ooh, okay, he's taken the Euro route. He's exactly. Just like, actually, I'm European.
Edirne is about 7 kilometers from the Turkish-Greek border.
Mm.
So it's about as far west as you can go and still be in the Ottoman Empire.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, it's a stone's throw from Greece. The Ottoman Empire, Turkey is kind of considered white if you ask the right person.
Yeah.
And he's married to a Vivian Bridget Mary Warby. I say all of those names because I've seen her referred to by all of those names in different stories. Mary is the most common one.
Damn, okay.
He's also, so Carl, in his application, is in good standing with some established earlier immigrants that give him a recommendation.
Yeah.
And that is the Arida Draping family of Konkari, uncles of Carl on his mother's side.
Oh.
So they're earlier Maronite migrants.
Yeah, yeah, who've come out and in the application process are like, oh yeah, Carl's a good boy.
Yeah.
Carlisle's our good boy.
Exactly. And underlined in his application is something from the Justice of the Peace, which says he is not a colored man. And that's good enough for the border guard. So Carl gets his citizenship, and our story is locked in.
Welcome to Cloncurry. This is the best town, in the best state, in the best country in the world.
Carl is active in his community. He's mentioned in the newspapers for some human interest stories. He's described, like, in all of these stories, like, Carl was doing his normal thing, making everyone laugh, and everyone had a great time. And he serves on the financial committee of a local hospital. He seems to be involved a little bit with organized labor. And he's one of the first investors of Qantas.
Seriously?
One of the original 12.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
That's nuts. So yeah. He's just like, everyone's like, oh yeah, we love Carlisle. We love having a laugh. Also, he invested in Qantas, the national airline.
His family are like pioneers. They're
holy
like
shit.
In that north, we talked about in the Sugar Slave, North Queensland area a lot of the time.
Where it's just like, hey, all this shit is fresh.
And all this shit is far away from each other.
True.
So he's a locally famous guy. There is a Carl Katter Bridge in Cloncurry serving as a lasting, what?
I just think that's funny, sorry.
Oh, that's the Carl Katter Bridge?
Yeah.
You're going to enjoy the picture I send you.
Oh, hell yeah.
Because it serves as a lasting memorial to the man. And I don't have a photo of Carlisle, so I'm going to send you a picture of the OG bridge sign. because they replaced it recently, and also a picture of a Maronite guy from around the same time. So you can,
oh, amazing! I can put it together.
Yeah, yeah. You can kind of see what they look like. So I'll just send those.
Okay, so I have a picture of the Karl Katter Memorial Bridge sign.
Yeah,
and they're so not at the bridge, right? Like, they're not currently at the bridge.
So that's at the, they had a ceremony because they were replacing the sign.
Yeah.
So that's their original sign, and they're okay, like behind the bridge or something.
Okay, I'm seeing, here's what I'm seeing. Here are four men. Three of the four men are wearing big white Akubras.
The same one.
The same one. They are also all wearing a blue shirt, like button-up business shirt in a variety of patterns. So we've got stripe, check, check, stripe.
So you've discovered the Katter uniform.
Yeah. All of these men look the same, and so I have to presume this is a photo of the Katters.
Well, so Bob's in that photo.
Yeah, is he the one on the most left?
He's looking off to the side.
Yeah, kind of. Wow, well, yeah, I can
he's
see.
He's just looking in a different direction. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Robbie's everybody in the else. Photo too.
Robbie.
I think he's the smallest one in the photo.
Robbie, yeah. These guys all kind of look the same. This is wild. This is great.
Yeah.
This is great. And the sign is old as fuck.
Yeah, and they're like replacing the sign, and so that's the old one.
Hell yeah.
Now, here's a picture of just like a random Maronite guy from the same community as...
Our boy Carlisle.
As our boy Carlisle.
Damn. Presuming that Carlisle looked like similar to this, maybe it's just the clothes he's wearing, but they were saying this is not a colored man?
They were saying this is not a colored man.
I mean...
Carl's parents were both related to that man, I guess, is how I can put it to you. And Carl looked the way he did.
I guess, you know what? Bob kind of looks the way he does.
Yeah, yeah. And Bob's a couple of generations down.
You know?
So Carl's life takes him all around the state of Queensland. And although he's going to be forever associated with the inner north of the state, it's in South Brisbane that Carl and Mary, or whoever she is, have their fourth child in 1918. Cummin Robert Katter.
Again, sorry?
Cummin Robert Katter.
Will you give that one to me one more time?
So, Cummin without a G at the end. So, just Cummin.
Just Cummin. Sure, what they were trying to do. Cumin? Like, what?
It's funny you say that. Cummin Robert Katter.
Cursed Google searches.
And so, that's Bob Katter Sr. So, I have another poem for you to read.
Oh, yay. Fear God, O history, and afflict me no more. The sight of you has made me detest life, and the cruelty of your sickle has caused me to love death. Leave me in my solitude to drain the cup of sorrow, my best wine. Go, history, to the west, where life's wedding feast is being celebrated. Here, let me lament the bereavement you have prepared for me. History came close to the maiden, stretched forth his hand and said,
"Shake my hand, O daughter of the prophets."
And she shook his hand and looked at him from behind a screen of tears and said, "Farewell, history, farewell." And he responded,
"Until we meet again, Syria, until we meet again."
And the old man disappeared like swift lightning, and Syria called her sheep and started on her way, saying to herself, "Shall there be another meeting?" So cool.
Another poem by Khalil Gibran, whose book The Prophet is one of the 100 best-selling books ever.
Damn, holy shit.
The Katters don't stay in South Brisbane for long after they have their beautiful baby boy, Cummin.
Stop.
So Cummin goes by Robert, well, Bob, his entire life, and like at some point he legally changes it to Robert Cummin Katter. But he spends his childhood in the town of Cloncurry. Cloncurry is pretty remote for a town of 3,000. During COVID, they had Survivor there.
What?
Everything here can kill you. Everything here wants to eat you.
Yeah, during COVID, they had Australian Survivor in Cloncurry. That's where Bob Katter Sr. grew up.
Jesus Christ.
In the fucking, like, 20s.
That's so goofy.
The closest major, so Reed Coastal town, is Townsville, which is about an 8.5-hour drive away today.
Damn.
Robert eventually moves closer to the coast, spending high school in Charters Towers. Only a couple of hours from Townsville, it's already a dying gold rush town by the time Robert's there. And I'm going to keep calling him Robert for a while for the ease of our story, but he's always known as Bob Katter. That is his name.
Okay, so he's the OG Bob Katter.
Yeah, yeah. I have a feeling And this is really just a feeling. I have zero to back this up. But there was never a plan for Robert to follow in his father's footsteps and stay working in the outback. The Kithars are somewhat connected to the priestly class of Maronites. Bob's uncles that run the drapery business are the brothers of the Patriarch of Antioch, Anthony Peter Arida, the Maronite guy I showed you earlier.
Oh, shit. That sounds like a very important title.
Yeah. The Patriarch of Antioch position dates back to the biblical St. Peter. And since his death, Anthony has been beatified.
Beatified.
Really?
Yeah.
Jesus. Beatified, which is the step before sainthood?
Yep.
Yeah. So I tell you all that to say, when Robert goes to Brisbane to study law, I think his family hoped he was going to parlay that into, like, nice job, high society life.
Yeah.
I think that's the plan.
Yeah.
And if it wasn't for World War II, I think that process would have been quicker, because he does get there.
Yeah.
Robert becomes one of the many Lebanese Australians whose lives were interrupted by, you know, Hitler.
Australia is also at war.
Damn, he'd do that, though.
Although his official service record lists him as Robert Cumin Catter.
Yeah, there we go, there we go. Because obviously whoever was doing this was like, well, his name's not Cumin.
Did they know about, like, cum in the 40s?
Did they know about cum in the... That's why, it's baby juice. Yeah, well, my penis cried inside of you.
Be like, oh, semen in me.
You made me so happy.
Honey bear, semen in me. Honey bear, quick.
I see men everywhere I go.
So, but it's definitely Robert, our Robert, that joins. It's unclear if he enlists or he's conscripted. And he's in the Australian Army in 1940. At some point during the war, he is promoted to captain of the 49th Battalion. These are the flesh pillows thrown in front of U.S. soldiers against the Japanese army in Papua New Guinea in 1942.
Oh, good.
At least 60% of the fighting force is killed in the ensuing battle. And by the time the battalion is withdrawn, apparently only 17 of the original 300 or so fighters are still alive.
Fuck off. That's nuts.
Because aside from all the slaughter by the Japanese army, a bunch of people just predictably got malaria and dysentery.
Yeah, and what just else? Fucking died because yeah, you're they, in...
They're in fucking Papua and they're from, like, Canberra.
Yeah, you're not made Wyala. For that.
Like, oh, my dad's from England, I'm from Wyala, and I'm going to go fight some Japanese people in Papua New Guinea. Yeah, you fucking died. And Robert also gets sick, but, like, months earlier and is sent back to Australia. He's not at the battle in question.
Oh, damn. Okay, so he, like, absolutely dodged a bullet. He got sick early and then was like, all right, yeah. I gotta go, fellas. I'll see you next time.
Exactly. Our Bob kind of implies he was. He'll be like, my father was part of the 49th Battalion. The 49th Battalion did this, this, this. You see?
Bob, come on now. You know damn well.
Robert Catter. Our Robert. The Robert we're talking about, he also doesn't go back to uni to study law. He's back at the drapery that the Aridas owned. He's selling curtains or whatever. I think it's like they're like import-export and they get fine goods from the Orient and such.
Yeah, that tracks.
I have to assume that the shop provided the curtain for the local movie theater, which Robert also ran.
Oh, shit.
It said that he wouldn't tolerate the segregated indigenous seats that were common for the time, so he rips out the concrete benches and steel barriers, and he gets everyone to sit in the same kind of chair next to each other.
Damn, okay. Yeah. Comrade Rob.
Yeah, and in 1945, Bob Catter Jr. is born, and we can start calling Robert by the name he's known in Australian history, Bob Catter Sr.
Yes, Bobby Sr., the big senior comer.
Well, he's Captain Cummin.
Captain Cummin, at your service.
I didn't write a segue. The paradox of labor politics in this country is that unsustainable, unnatural, and painful communities centered around material extraction are still populated by people who are innocently looking for a living wage.
And Bob, how dare they?
Well, Bob Sr. is on grant to ingratiate himself with those people and thus represent them for extraction.
Yeah.
The Arida family have been associated with the Labour Party since the time of the 1891 Shearer Strike, which is a Wikipedia page you should read.
Damn.
And Bob Sr. carries on that tradition, sort of. I'd love if we could get some of the audio of his radio show, Catter's Candid Comments.
What?
But I couldn't find any. Whatever his exact views were, he developed a reputation for bluntness in his advocacy for pensioners, Aboriginal people, and health services in rural communities. While he's the chair of the Cloncurry Mount Isa Shire Council in the early 1950s, him and a mate apparently got together over drinks, and they decided they could burn the hospital down to force the state government to rebuild it, but they don't do it.
Oh, my God.
Because, like, a Catholic priest shows up and speaks to them for an hour. And they're like,
yeah,
okay.
And it's just like, hey, boys, stand down. But hey, you know what? You know what'll get you sent to hell? Burning down a fucking hospital. Are you serious?
Well, they had the idea because they'd been petitioning the government for a new hospital for years. The next town over had their hospital burned down and got a new hospital.
Okay, this is such a, I get it. This is such a small town solution. This is such a country motherfucker solution. Just
it's
like,
a country motherfucker
solution.
His union involvement is also across pretty broad parts of society. So from the very much white collar, like tally clerks union to dock workers on the Brisbane shores or whatever. He wants to see their earning potential grow and in theory, their quality of life also grow. And here's where we get to the, why we can't have an Australia for Australians and also a nice world.
Why are you so fucking negative all the time?
Something that you and I say to each other to center ourselves in these discussions is a phrase I heard some other podcaster say about Canada. You have to remember that fundamentally, this is a country that's a company that rips shit out of the ground, processes it, and sells it. In the early 1960s, this wasn't as true. Australia was probably better characterized as a pastoralist pioneer economy. Large sections of the minerally productive areas of the country were still being settled.
Mm.
And the countries with money to burn, so the UK, Europe, and the US, were looking for food and merch. A third of our exports were wool, a sixth were wheat, and most of it was going to the United Kingdom, Europe, or the US.
Well, yeah, suddenly there's a big fucking, allegedly empty, definitely no other people here.
Yeah.
Swath of land that is like, okay, well, we'll try farming this shit. I mean, now we've just got big crop places.
Exactly.
And also, you know, there's no like real country, or if there is a country, it's like young.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, you have to have foreign investors to be able to like try and globally compete. And so, yeah, you just
this
you
nation just, state stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you sell a cash crop.
Yep.
Or you do cattle. Australia was a big farm for the West. And that's not true anymore. So I've got this chart which lays out what we exported in 2023, and I was hoping you could just really briefly describe the kind of picture the chart presents.
Look at this graph!
All right, I'm so ready. I love charts.
What's the
love...
biggest rectangle, Karen?
Huh. So at a whopping 35%, we have mineral fuels, oils, and distillation products. Coming in at 28%, we have ore, slag, and ash.
Ash. And slag?
Oh, the boys are slag, the best you ever had.
Yeah.
A quarter of our exports are slag?
You know, ore, slag, and ash.
That's what we do now, and we mostly send it to China, Japan, South Korea, and India. We're not sending it to developed economies anymore. I mean, we're not sending it to the UK, which wants nice things. We're sending it to developing, like, industrializing countries. So Japan, South Korea, and I mean, Japan and South Korea are not developing. Developing is a bad word. We're sending it to countries that need a bunch of concrete and shit like that.
Yeah. What's insane to me, seeing so clearly as well our relationship with China,
yeah,
fiscally and economically, why the fuck are we always trying to piss them off? Why are we always doing this shit when they're our biggest buyer? Are you fucking dumb?
Yeah.
Maybe I don't know how economics and global trade works, but it seems like a bad idea to constantly piss off the person who's buying the most of your shit. Like, I'm not running a lemonade stand and throwing lemonade in the face of the guy who comes every day to buy lemonade.
Got any grapes?
I am. And he still comes
well,
because...
Well, you shouldn't. Unless he likes that.
Because that's what he wants.
Oh, okay.
And you can't kink shame him.
Okay. Okay.
Don't kink shame Common Catter, the guy who... No, it's not... No, he's dead.
Don't kink shame my lemon cummer.
Bob Sr. is from a family of Levantine import-export business people with clerical ties. This doesn't mean anything, but in the story I'm telling you, it also means everything. He's looking at a combination of labor, resources, and demand, and making a really simple, dumb guy decision. Let's fucking get this money, boys, shall we?
Let's get this money, baby. No risk, no reward.
Hell yeah, brother.
It's 1966, and Harold Holt is an incredibly popular Prime Minister.
Oh, no.
It is feared that the Prime Minister has drowned.
The Liberal Country Coalition Party, which Bob Sr. is a member of the latter, the Country Party, won 72 of the 124 seats at the previous election. The 1966 election is a humiliation which almost resigns Labour to irrelevance. Oof. Holt's coalition picks up 10 more seats. They get 82, which is double Labour's 41.
Shit.
And it gives them a crazy mandate to continue the Vietnam War, which they were doing.
Yeah, fuck them, I guess.
Fuck them, I guess, you know. The seat of Kimberley, which encompasses most of North Queensland, had been a Labor seat held by the Rorden family since 1929, but the younger Rorden is retiring, and his replacement, Barry Dittmar, doesn't conjure... Dittmar is a dumb name, because Dittmar. It's spelled Dittmer.
Oh, like D-I-T-T-M-E-R. Oh, Dittmar.
Why do you talk that way?
Yeah.
Oh, it's the accent.
Yeah.
It's the accent. We had this
For
conversation
the longest
before.
Time, I thought that the dude's name was like D-I-T-M-A-H, because all you motherfuckers say Dittmar.
Yeah, Dittmar.
His name is Dittmer. Anyway, Barry Dittmer.
Dittmer.
It's what his name is. Doesn't conjure enough support to knock off the juggernaut that is Bob Catter Sr.
Stop. Catter.
He's gained a reputation for driving to wherever in the electorate to welcome you if you've just moved in. And he might have needed every single one of those seats. In first count, it's only 137 votes between the two. He takes heaps of second preferences, though.
Mm.
He's everyone's second favorite guy because he drove out and met me.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's actually nuts.
The electorate's three times the size of Victoria.
Yeah, it's like, oh, hey, man, do you live around here? And he's like, no. Sick as.
I drive 18 hours. There's all these stories of like, yeah, there was a debutante ball in a town of people and there were three debutantes and two of them were 8 and one of them was 75 and Bob Catter was there.
You look beautiful, young ladies. Very good.
I'll send you a picture of Bob Catter Sr.
I'm begging, yes, please.
Is half Lebanese. Since we're doing Blood Quantum and stuff, so the last guy was full Lebanese. This guy's half Lebanese.
All right.
He looks like Bob Catter if he was like half more Lebanese.
Was browner, yeah. Like, you can't tell me that this isn't an ethnic man.
It's him quite late in life, and he spent a lot of time in the sun, but
which
yeah.
I guess makes sense, but even like... This looking at him not next to anybody else is hard. I feel like he might either look more or less Lebanese if he's next to, like, a British Australian.
I, after, like, reading about him, can't see anything other than just, like, a Lebanese dude like a lot of Lebanese dudes I know.
Yeah.
Looking at him. And him winning this election in 1966 kicks off what we can call the Catter dynasty. So he holds it from 66 to 1990 when he retires.
Damn.
And he gets more than 50% of the first preferences in every one of those elections until the last.
Holy fuck.
So we're going to skip ahead to 1990, which is the first election in Kennedy not to have a Catter in it since 1966.
Brutal. What must the people be feeling?
Well, they vote some guy in. I didn't write it down. And Bob Sr., because Bob Sr. decides not to contest it, and Bob Jr. is not there yet.
Fair enough.
A week before the election, Bob Sr. dies and stuff.
What?
And pretty much everyone in Parliament comes out to tell stories of Bob Sr.'s life, which was super convenient for me. So this is the legacy, reputation, and network that our Bob is going to carry in 1993 when he runs for and takes back the seat of Kennedy from the man who vanquished his father.
Hell yeah, okay.
Well, no, the man who followed his father. He didn't contest it.
No, he killed him psychically.
But it was a Labour guy he took it back from.
Yeah, bastard.
And I think that'll do well to set the scene for that episode when we finally get to it. So, let's read some obituaries.
Yes!
Ted Lindsay delivers a long eulogy that doubles as an interestingly told life story of the big man. Where you get that story of Bob Sr. trying to burn down a hospital from it. He ends it saying that Plato doesn't know shit about life and humanity compared to Bob Catter Sr. And that's why everyone in Northwest Queensland loves him.
True words never spoken.
Like, literally, like I'm not joking. He doesn't say Plato doesn't know shit. He does say, compared to Bob Catter Sr., Plato knew barely anything.
Nice. No, I wish he'd gotten up there and just, you know, tearfully, beer in hand. Plato doesn't fucking know shit compared to Bob. Bob is a fucking legend. I love him.
What's Plato done for me lately?
Yeah.
I don't know how to reconcile like Bob Catter Sr.'s humanity with his official biography's description of him as an early hawk of the Vietnam War. But in his eulogy, again, his appointment as Minister for the Army in February of 1972 gave him great joy. He was very proud of the Australian Army and took great pride in singing the praises of the services when he was Army Minister. Kim Beazley chimes in to say that his contributions to the defence debate were among the best ever written in this country and certainly ever emanating from this Parliament, which I don't think is true, but I'm a dummy. I tried to find anything interesting in Hansard, but it's mainly like, oh my god, the boys are so beautiful and brave and strong, and the opposition not supporting them is making the country look weak because the opposition is weak. And this guy gets up and be like, hey, he just called us all weak for not supporting the war. And Bobcat Sr. is like, you are weak and you're cowards. It's just that.
You're all a pack of cowards.
And, you know, you don't want to go to Vietnam and spend more on the boys. So I got nervous from the next line in the eulogy.
Oh, no.
He also had a special interest in African affairs and was a member of the Australian Parliamentary Observer Team to Zimbabwe in 1980. I know what you're thinking, but and he wasn't doing like good things over there, but it's
he wasn't
not
doing the worst.
He's working with Mugabe. He's
okay.
Not working with Rhodesia.
Okay.
And
okay.
He is certainly like it seems like if I were to summarize it, kind of Australian soft power augmenting American soft power, tempering the revolution, protecting like Rhodesian maniacs who were like trying to mine the town and like the Mozambicans and Zimbabweans are like, we're going to shoot him. And he's like, no.
He's like, oh, better not. Better not, everybody.
Because, and, you know, because, like, here's the justification. Is like, because the whole media is here and they're going to see a bunch of black people shooting at white people and they're going to send the armies.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Optically, he's like,
well, it's kind of both ways. And, like, he's also, like, he's ensuring Mugabe doesn't support communism or continue his communism of the earlier time.
Yeah, that old gem where everybody's like, no, we'll be your best friend as long as you don't do communism.
Yeah, like, and Bob Sr., like, hates communism. But he's also, he's not propping up apartheid by any stretch of the imagination. Like, he's super supportive of Mugabe and he makes friends there amongst, like, the revolutionary leaders and such. And reading him very generously, I think Bobcatter understands the power of the media and its capacity to distort events and generate white violence at the drop of a hat.
Mm.
But also, it could just be dumb guy stuff.
Yeah, maybe he's just out there just like full-assing it like, yeah, this is just what I do. This is fully what I believe. This is me.
I could believe that too. He doesn't seem like a liar. I don't know. Back at the eulogies, and Barry Jones is the 12th speaker. So we must have been going for more than an hour at this point. And this might be hard for our modern brains to understand, this whole thing. But this is 1990s Australian, like, allyship. And Kieran, I was hoping you could read this out.
Oh, I would love to.
I want to add a few words of tribute to Bob Catter, a man whom I liked very much. His background was even more interesting and complex than the previous tributes have indicated. He certainly came from a pioneering family in Queensland, but it was a pioneering family with a difference, a Lebanese family. The affectionate description of him as the old camel driver really reflects this Middle Eastern origin. His consciousness of, and indeed his pride in his background, which has not been mentioned so far, was one reason for his tolerance and humanity on racial issues. He stood out like a sore thumb or granny's tooth in the Queensland National Party context in his forward-looking attitude on racial issues.
Damn.
And, like, he's explicit as saying, like, people used to call me, like, camel driver and I hated it. I don't know anything about camels. People used to call me the Afghan and I hated it from nowhere near Afghanistan.
He's like, hey, at least be racially accurate when you're discriminating. Come on, don't fucking, like, embarrass me,
you know,
like that.
Remember the old camel driver, the affectionate nickname?
You know, we used to fucking ask him, where's your turban? And he'd always be like, I don't have a turban. And we'd laugh.
Okay. It's hard to appraise all of this now in our modern age, but that's wokeness at the time. And Bobcatter Sr. gained a reputation for being very woke when it comes to race. Swinging back to the 60s for a second, Harold Holt's government put forth a referendum relating to Indigenous Australians, and the content of mandate of the referendum is narrow, specific, and misunderstood. Most of the Wikipedia page is, like, misconceptions about referendum.
Mm.
But over time, it has become regarded as a tentpole moment in the establishment of Indigenous Australian legal rights.
Okay.
So just before we go on, just please read about the referendum from a couple of sources, but for the purposes of our story, it's a referendum about whether the government should spend money on specific policies to specifically benefit Aboriginal people. And Bobcatter Sr. is in the House speaking in support of it.
At long last, another step is being taken to give these people appropriate status. In my town...
I'll go deal with that.
Yeah. Yeah.
At long last, another step is being taken to give these people appropriate status. In my town, we simply live with these people. I am 48 years old and I've been associated with them all my life. I've been to school with them, grown up with them, and mixed with them. Psychologically, we can never see any difference. This bill will do something to counteract the very bad reputation we have among people overseas who have heard of the White Australia policy. If the White Australia policy were applied in my town, we would be segregated. So in effect, discrimination does not really exist. Yet the idea that it does is given a lot of publicity. We are showing here tonight that it does not exist.
Damn, thanks. Thanks, Big Bobby Boo. Thanks, Big Bob Boy Cummins. Yeah, turns out no discrimination. Yay, we did it. We did it. Oh my God, we did it.
We did it!
It's an odd little quote, isn't it?
Yeah. Just the, really interesting for him to have all of these discussions about how intimately his life is entwined with that of, like, Indigenous Australians, but he refuses to believe discrimination is a thing, I guess. And it's like, you haven't talked to anybody?
It's not quite that. He's saying, because he's not someone who, throughout his career, like, because he does advocate for increased rights for Indigenous people, and thus implicitly understands. He is someone that's saying, I suppose, on the human level, in his town, for instance, people do not segregate.
Yes.
There is a unified community. And so that can exist and thus should exist.
Okay. That makes more sense.
Maybe. You know, I will give him the grace and like he is able to recognize the existence of discrimination and instances of it. And he does in his speeches and stuff.
Yeah. And isn't it harking back very briefly to Carlisle? Carlisle was the one who... No, was Bob the one who set up the cinema, or was it Carlisle?
Bob.
Bob set up. Yeah, so he's on the ground doing the work, you know, ripping out chairs. No segregation here.
Well, I think there's a couple of things going on. I think Bob Catter Sr. knows, like, hey, these people can pay money to my cinema.
Yeah.
Just the way as well.
Hey,
as
your money works
can.
Here too.
Exactly. You know, and I think Bob Catter Sr. might have been one of the first ethnic Australian politicians to intentionally wield the power of white communalism. And part of why he could is because his Australianness and his performance of quasi-whiteness is something he had to learn and perform it from the perspective of a viewer, and thus perfected and manipulated it.
Vibe, honestly.
This is very reading between the lines, because all the eulogies are written by people who are white, and they don't even like mention the fact that he's Lebanese till the ninth one.
Yeah. You know, and hey, this is a funny parallel. Perhaps this is just a funny parallel for us. I get it, for sure. Being trans, you know?
Yeah.
Perfecting the idea of being a woman and how it is viewed and, you know, stuff like that. And hey, he's just doing the same thing.
You end up quite perceptive about certain things.
Yeah.
And part of why I say that, and this is skipping ahead a long way in the future, but Robbie Catter, on describing this time in his family's life, is like, well, it's a big, dark Lebanese family.
Hmm. Interesting.
At one point, Bob Catter Sr. renames a type of army helicopter after the Kalkadoon people, so he's not perfect. they've been renamed to Cattercopters now.
No, they haven't.
It's what it said.
Stop.
Get in
the Cattercopter. I'm coming.
He's Robert. it's just hard to tell how much of it is him like acting like a dumb guy because it plays well, or how much of it is that he's a dumb guy and it plays well.
And funnily enough, everyone's like, we love this dumb guy.
Yeah, but he does seem nice. Everyone says they like him. Everyone who meets him says they like him. He will drive to the ends of his huge electorate to help you mend your fence. He fiercely advocated for and has the reputation as having delivered significant development in the North Queensland region. From safer roads to electricity infrastructure to television connections to the army, everything that you need to secure large holdings of land for extractive purposes. His contributions to mining and cattle are also celebrated. And nobody really seems to know where to put him politically. Because at his death, he's part of the National Party, but he was also part of the country, a previous version of the Labour Party, and then the Queensland Labour Party, which is different. And he certainly wasn't a neoliberal capitalist. He definitely is like a family farm rather than big companies. He works to break up some monopolies and such. And that means things sound good to the people who live there.
Yeah.
air conditioners, fridges, telephones, medical facilities, their locally popular policies, and
yeah,
he's got a reputation for getting it done.
Absolutely. I mean, if I was in that position, I probably would be a fan of him too. I'd be like, oh, fuck, we've got aircon now.
Exactly.
Hell yeah.
And like, as Albo says, you have to ask people to vote for you.
Yeah, and if you'll drive all the way across North Queensland for it, why wouldn't you?
Exactly. And in his last few years on the campaign trail, Bob Sr. is spending his time with Bob Jr., making sure everyone knows who's going to take over. So I'll send you a picture of the two of them around
Aww,
this time.
Oh, he's taking his boy along. He's like, this is my boy.
Yeah, Bob Jr. At this point is like 45.
This is my young, beautiful boy.
Is in the Senate, I think.
This is my little boy.
No, not the Senate, sorry. He's in state parliament, sorry.
Okay, whoa. Firstly of all, Bob Catter's haircut, like Bob Jr.'s haircut.
He looks like a beetle.
I was about to say, look at this beetle, motherfucker. I wanna
hold you. Hot pad, Samuel Madigraph.
And Bob Jr., when he was at uni, pelted the Beatles with eggs because he was like, I don't want this in my country. Which,
that's
like,
so funny, bro. You stole their look. Come
no,
on
but
now.
I support him for doing
He's
that.
Right to do it, but god damn. This is actually really cute. I really like this photo. So we've got Bob Sr. on the left. We've got Bob Jr. on the right. Bob Sr., you know, he's looking a bit older. He's wearing a suit and tie. He's got, like, hair that looks like it would be quite curly if it wasn't kind of slicked down. Then we've got our little Bob. He's over there. He's got his Beatles-ass haircut, which is wild to look. He's got the Bieber cut. He's genuinely got the Bieber cut.
I'm going to say something that you're not going to like and that Bob Catter would also not like, but he looks hot.
Oh, my God. You'd fuck young Bob Catter?
I didn't say that.
Oh, sorry.
I don't think he'd be interested.
Okay. Well, but what if he came up to you in a bar and was like, hey, what's up?
Yeah.
How you doing?
No, like a guy who looks like that. Yeah, absolutely. Like, I think that's a hot guy. I'm like, oh yeah, that's a tall mixed guy with like good hair.
Fair
enough. I don't
enough.
Know about like necessarily if I like his haircut. I don't know if I wouldn't have liked his haircut in the 80s.
Fair. Very on trend.
You know? And like, if he acted the way that Bob Catter acted, I wouldn't be interested in him. But if that guy came up to me and acted normal, I'd be very interested.
I'd be like, hey, what's up? How you doing? He's got strong eyebrows. So him and his dad, they share strong eyebrows. I think they have the same eyes as well. The nose is slightly different. So
yeah.
Little Bob has a longer kind of nose. Their lips. The problem with looking at Australian men's lips is they kind of disappear after a while. And like,
Bob Catter Sr. spent most of his life in the North Queensland sun.
Yeah, you know, like, it kind of makes sense. Yeah. Like, it's the same with, like, my family and stuff. It's, you know,
the lips disappear.
The lips disappear. Sometimes you just don't need lips.
Your body makes accommodations for the conditions it's in.
Yeah.
I'll end this section on Bob Catter Sr. with Ron Boswell's parting words on the man. I believe that the people in Mount Isa said it all on the day of the funeral. Many thousands of people lined the streets from the church to the cemetery to pay their respects to their member of 24 years. He had won a great deal and done much for North Queensland. Bob lived by the maxim, work hard, play hard, and pray hard. He is survived by his wife, Joy, four sons, Bob, Norman, Carl, Richard, and two daughters, Geraldine and Bernadette.
Damn, he had heaps of kids, but also like, come on now, work hard, play hard, pray hard.
Come on, man.
Come on now.
The Bob mentioned there is obviously Bob Jr., our Bob Catter. By the time of Bob Sr.'s death, Bob has also already had his beautiful baby boy, Robbie.
Okay.
But before we do that, and by do that, I mean talk about Robbie Catter. We're going to take a short, extremely unexpected to me side quest here. Let's talk about Bob's half-brother, Carl Catter.
The traveler walked on, wondering in his heart, and he met a very old man, and saluting him, he said, Sir, upon this road I have met three men who live in the neighborhood, and I have asked each of them about the Field of Zard. And each one denied what the other had said, and each one told me a new tale that the other had not told.
The old man raised his head and answered, My friend, each and every one of these men told you what was indeed so, but few of us are able to add fact to different fact and make a truth thereof.
So I said half-brother, but there's no salacious details here. Bob Sr. was married to Mabel Horn from 1943 until her death in 1971, and then was married to Jocelyn Steele from 1976 until his death in 1990.
Okay, so this is a remarriage after being widowed kind
exactly.
of thing.
Exactly. And Bob Jr. is one of his children with Mabel, so he's born in 1945. Carl is one of his children with Jocelyn, and he's born in 1978.
Jesus, that's a massive gap.
Huge. Nothing quite punctuates this more than the fact that Carl is a year younger than his nephew Robbie.
Holy shit. Like absolutely, I get it for sure. There are so many families with that makeup. Shocks the shit out of me every time.
Yeah, every time.
Yeah, somebody I went to school with who was in my class, his aunt was in the year above us.
That's so weird.
And I was like, bro, that's not real. And he's like, yeah, no, she's my aunt. And she's like, yeah, this is my nephew. And I'm like, girl, you're 16. What do you mean?
Did you change his diaper?
What the fuck?
Do you hold that over him? I wouldn't shut up about it.
Honestly.
I'd be like, hey, what's up, Neff?
Hey, kiddo.
Kid's like bigger than me. Anyway, by the time Carl is born, Bob Jr. has been in Queensland Parliament for 3 years.
Okay, yeah.
So he's like, they don't have a sibling relationship at all.
No, this is an adult man and a baby that's related to him, but is in no sense a brother. Except How can you be a brother like that?
Except for in the literal, like, literal, I guess.
Family tree.
Exactly. When Carl is 12, Bob Sr. dies.
Damn.
And when he's 15, Bob Jr. has already become the member for Kennedy.
Damn.
When Carl is 18, he comes out as gay.
Ooh.
Welcome to the story of Bob Catter's gay half-brother, Carl.
Holy shit. Holy shit.
The articles about this, they have crazy names. Homosexuality separates Catters, muses the Australian, and then they follow up with Catter's gay sibling hits back at Bob.
What?
Yeah, and then we got Catter's gay brother airs his disgust from the Brisbane Times.
How did I not know about this?
Carl Catter enters the news cycle twice. Once is in 2011.
Okay.
And that's when Bob Catter is at Parliament House at an anti-gay rally, and he says the idea of same-sex marriage deserves to be laughed at and ridiculed. Now, it's the kind of shit country we expect from Bob, but I mean, actually, I'm not going to write a summary for what happened next. I think the Sydney Morning Herald actually did some good, like, comic journalism with these paragraphs. So I'm just going to send you a segment from their article.
Yeah,
the
please.
The introduction about what happened when Carl Catter entered the news cycle.
Bob Catter shouldn't hold his breath waiting for an invitation to his brother Carl's wedding, should such an event occur. His brother Carl last night burst onto the nation's television screens to announce that, as it happened, he was homosexual. And if he met a man he'd like to spend his life with, he'd hope to marry him. Yeah, holy shit. Just like, that's...
People were so weird.
That's always that fucking shit with conservatives. If it's not them doing the shit, it's somebody close to them. And it's like, this is the same thing with Tony Abbott and his gay sister.
Yeah.
Like, you'll need to calm down. Do you actually hate your siblings that much?
But Tony Abbott's gay sister is like a liberal member.
Gay liberal.
Yeah.
You know?
Actually, hold that thought.
Okay.
So, Carl was brought up in Mount Isa, which is deep in Catter country. He's 12 when Bob infamously says, I will walk to Bourke backwards if the poof population of North Queensland is any more than 0.001%. And I did some maths, and I think that's one person, and I think he's talking about Carl.
He's like, there can only be one
gay
in my electorate, and it is my sissy brother.
Yeah, the Sydney Morning Herald references this event in the title of the article you just read from. No gays, Bob? Try closer to home.
God damn it. They're just like, uh-oh, Bob, don't look now. It's your gay brother, Carl.
They fucking shoot Osama bin Laden in the head and the world loses its mind for 3 months.
Jesus.
Anyway, the gay young Catter has a story you will sadly have heard before. He grows up in Mount Isa, and it means people call him all manner of poofta and F-slur, and honestly, I have to assume Bob is one of those people.
Surely.
But I don't have to assume that, actually. Carl tells the Brisbane Times, this isn't the first time he's made those kinds of comments or perpetuated hate. It's hard for me, but at the moment, I don't have a good relationship with him. I hardly ever see him. I haven't seen him for many years, actually.
Yeah, that is not only expected given their age difference and, like, you know, all of that.
Yeah.
But add on to the fact that it's like, oh, yeah, also I'm gay and my big brother, who is like 30 years older than me, hates gay people.
He's one of the most famous gay haters in the country.
Yeah, it's not looking good for a nice brotherly relationship.
To all my queer friends, queer listeners from the Queensland country, you know who you are. I love you all. You will be relieved to know that by the time of this interview, Carl has escaped to Melbourne, like everyone else.
Ugh.
He's appeared in some campaigns supportive of same-sex marriage at the time when the sitting Prime Minister, Julia Gillard, and the opposition leader, Tony Abbott, are united in not wanting same-sex marriage.
So fucking goofy.
So there's a growing push from constituencies, so from local Labour members, to update this defect. In 2016, Carl Catter completes the prophecy. See, more than a few people said about Bob Catter Sr. that he served every party except Labour, or he worked with everyone except Labour while in politics, but Kim Beazley described him in his obituary as someone who certainly thought of himself as being part of the Labour Party tradition. And in 2016, Carl Robert Catter is on the ballot of the seat of Higgins in the federal election, and holy fuck, does he look good.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Look, he hasn't escaped the blue button-up shirt that the Catters are so famous for.
But he's got a nice jacket.
His hair looks good. His jacket looks good. Like,
He does kind of look like the Catters.
He does look like the Catters, but he does also look different, and I don't know what it is.
Basic hygiene and trimming.
Yeah, I think it's just a general...
Like, he just looks after himself a bit.
Yeah.
He doesn't live in fucking
Mount
Isa. You
can kind of tell that he looks after himself. He also has great hair. I really like his hair.
Yeah, his hair looks great.
Hell yeah, Carl.
Yeah. Yeah,
fuck no, yeah.
This is
a great guy.
He's a fun dude. It's an interesting moment in history analysis about his campaign. The intersections of sexuality, progressiveness, labor politics, the rise of the Greens in the electorate at a state level, the Liberal Party's loss of the cities, the prevalence of footballers in Parliament. Crikey hints at it with their article, "No conspiracies afoot with Catter's candidacy," because the Greens pick a different gay guy to run against him, and people are like, "Oh, are you just picking that guy because he's gay?" And Greens are like, "Well, we've been picking gay guys."
They're like, come on now. This party is full of gays.
This party's like foundationally gay. But Carl loses and kind of fades away from the public eye. So
damn.
We're just going to leave it at a Twitter exchange between Carl and a gay Liberal MP. And listen, the boys are fighting. And
oh, no.
You can be Carl and I'm going to be Tim. I'll send you our little script.
Amazing. Oh, I'm so excited.
So,
and there is that smug Tim Wilson, gay member of the Liberal Party. Obviously has such self-hate to join Libs who fundamentally hate who he is.
Princess, I've been lecturing ALP cabinet members regarding marriage for same-sex couples since before you were out.
Why are you a member of a party that hates who you are? The Liberal Party support protectors of pedos like Pell.
Dude, either you need to learn something about political philosophy or get off the drugs or booze or both. I hate Tim Wilson so much.
He's just like, actually, I've been gay. Actually, if you wanted to know about me, I'm actually gay, and I've been gay longer and harder and faster and stronger.
And smarter.
And thicker. And wetter and hotter.
Oh my god. It's like, Carl Catter is based. That was fucking sick.
Yeah, he's just like, hey, your party really likes pedophiles, and Tim Wilson is just like, nah, shut up, stupid, read a book.
Read a book, stop taking drugs.
You're an alcoholic. And it's like, okay, which is worse, alcoholic or pedophile? You be the judge.
Look, if you're someone out there and you struggle with pedophilia, but you haven't done anything yet and you become an alcoholic instead, Godspeed.
Godspeed.
Godspeed. Stay drinking. Don't go to family reunions.
Yep.
Look, I haven't dropped a clown show list moment in this episode yet, so here's some things Tim Wilson has advocated for other than his right to have a big, expensive gay wedding.
Okay.
His right to abolish the Human Rights Commission. Any Australian's right to say the N-slur.
Tim!
Cigarette companies' right to have colourful packaging. Israel's right to do whatever they want.
Tim!
His right to bring in his hedge fund manager cousin to manage an inquiry that he was managing that was already breaking a bunch of election laws.
Tim!
The right to free speech for religious institutions and climate change deniers, but not people critical of Anzac Day.
Tim!
Yeah, Tim loses eventually, and he seems desperate to get back into Parliament, but I hope Carl is having the last laugh.
Hell yeah.
Tim is from the classic political tradition of the rich can be as gay as they fucking like as long as they get to stay rich.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like, hey, as long as I can, like, if you're meeting most of the criteria but you've got a cheeky little bit of homosexuality, it's okay. If you're rich and racist and you've got connections, you can be gay.
Yeah.
You can be gay. That's fine.
That's absolutely fine.
But if you're poor and gay, very bad. If you're not white and gay...
We got a gay Lebanese man who's anti-liberal, and he's having a Twitter argument with a Liberal Party member. He's like, "Princess, read some political philosophy." It's like, bro, your party is really explicit in their hatred of gayness.
Haste, ladies. Boots the house down. Fact check it.
Glad things only got better from 2016. On the topic of staying rich, let's look at the man who's probably going to keep a Catter king in the electorate of Kennedy. We're going to talk about Robbie Catter, and so you have... one more poem to read.
Hell yes.
Pity the nation whose statesman is a fox, whose philosopher is a juggler, and whose art is the art of patching and mimicking.
Pity the nation that welcomes its new ruler with trumpeting and farewells him with hooting, only to welcome another with trumpeting again. Pity the nation whose sages are dumb with years and whose strong men are yet in the cradle. Pity the nation divided into fragments, each fragment deeming itself a nation.
That's a good one. I like that.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, Khalil Gibran, he's famous.
Fucking goes off.
He's dead now.
Well.
I'm a credulous person. I inherited this from my mother, who I have to assume inherited it from hers. If somebody tells me something and they're like looking at me, I'm going to believe them while they're talking, and I'll end up taken for a logical ride somewhere I don't want to go. But I do have a filter for silliness. I can't imagine spending time with Bob Catter and not having the spell broken by him fucking wandering off into the forest grumbling to himself about a turkey or something.
Where are you going? Oh, sorry.
It's oh, you're so right. You're so right. We should deport all of those people. Bob, why are you climbing that tree?
Yeah, it's just like, wait, what happened?
Hang on, where am I? Where am I?
Right? Oh my God. Robbie is polished. I think I was probably primed for him to say something silly when I queued up an interview he did for the Batuta Advocates podcast.
Well.
So he might just be reasonable, and I'm just shocked by how, you know, normal he is in comparison to silly, but Robbie Catter is much more like a modern politician than Bob Catter. He's not really like, he doesn't act like a catter in the way that we kind of imagine, unless you get him talking about abortion.
Ooh, yeah, yep.
Robbie was groomed for this life from birth. By the time he was born in 1977, Bob Sr. was in his fourth term at the federal level and Bob Jr.'s in state parliament. They put him on the road young. He starts selling cattle stations when he's in year 11 or so, and he works 15 years as a property valuer.
Wait, he's selling cattle stations at what, like 17?
Yes. Well, because he's from Qantas money.
Yeah.
And, like, he says also, like, the whole time he was selling cattle stations, the property value of cattle stations was going up. And he's like, I only went to people's houses with good news. And I'm like, hi, I'm Bob Catter's son. Your house is worth more than it was before.
Yeah, I guess everybody's going to be like, oh, amazing.
Yeah.
Thank you, Robbie.
Yeah. Like,
he's like, I didn't do a damn thing.
In his interview, he talks about how it's like his perfect training for parliament. Like, he's like, yeah, my job was driving around my electorate, introducing myself to people and hearing what they want to, you know, what they want.
Damn. Yeah. I guess that's a pretty good point.
And I think it's intentional, but he does make a bunch of money. He becomes the third Bob Catter to attend, but the first Bob Catter to finish university.
Well,
he graduates with a degree in property economics at the Queensland University of Technology.
Damn.
Now, Robbie played rugby league at a high level, it says, but he's so charming about this in his interview. He diffuses the Batuta boys and he's like, listen, there was much more Bob trying to live vicariously through me than like real passion. But he also gets a pilot's license, which
what?
I have. Yeah, I imagine that's probably relatively common living where he lives.
I guess that
but
makes sense.
He's a qualified pilot, and apparently he enjoys performing in theater productions.
Holy shit. Why is he so well-rounded?
Because they're making him.
Yeah, I guess that's true. They've been able to build him.
This is a prince.
Yeah.
He's been in state parliament since 2012, when he was 35. Robbie's state electorate of Mount Isa is pretty much entirely within Bob's federal electorate of Kennedy, and given how popular the family is, it seems like it was probably an easy win.
Yeah.
He's now the head of Catter's Australian Party, and his local popularity, so 74% once preferences were counted at his most recent election.
Damn.
Makes total sense given the material needs of the electorate. When he's describing his politics, Robbie says that economically, they're far left, and culturally and environmentally, they're to the right of Stalin. I'm too much of a dummy to appraise his policies on that spectrum in a global sense, compared to Stalin, but within the context of the North Queensland area specifically, I think that makes sense. Mostly, there's a stream of logical consistency there.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Like, Catter's parties have a track record of supporting family farms over corporate farms.
Yeah,
they identify choke points in a system and identify burgeoning American monopolies and break them with legislation. He calls himself anti-capitalist. Robbie's pet issue when it comes to social things is blue cards, better known Australia-wide as a working with children card. He has introduced amendments to legislation to allow for Indigenous community leaders to issue those cards himself.
Huh.
To allow communities to exercise traditional parenting models and stop people who have, you know, charged with a weed crime at 18 from being fired from a school job as an adult. because they can't get a blue job through the existing apparatus, which would disqualify them.
It's like, oh, you've got a drug conviction.
Yeah. It's progressive in a context, but also then you've got the superstructure. But it's not necessarily what I think you'd expect.
No, it's definitely not.
Given the portrayal of the Catters.
Yeah, my feelings on the Catters were that they were going to be like real, kind of like authoritarian, hard right, you know, like Bible bashing kind of dudes.
And
I guess they kind of are, but they're also not.
No, that's the thing. It's not
clear cut. It's really weird.
It's hard to add facts together to get the truth.
Yep.
So a consistent part of his rhetoric is just the difference between Southeast Queensland, so like Greater Brisbane, and North Queensland. So that goes for parenting and jobs and inevitably development.
Yeah.
So he says, try and build anything bigger than a cubby house in Queensland and you'll have four departments trying to stop you. And he says these policies are made for Brisbane and they don't make sense for the outback. He talks about COVID as well. He's like, we had one case of COVID, and I don't know if this is true, but what he says, we had one case of COVID ever in the town. They didn't leave their quarantine, but we weren't allowed to go to the pub and have a beer. It was illegal for us to go to the pub and have a beer, even though there was, like, North Queensland, COVID didn't hit.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's if you're in a town of 300 people.
In the middle of fucking nowhere.
In the middle of fucking nowhere, and no one's coming and no one's going, then, you're not going to how are you going to catch it? How are you going to fucking catch it?
Exactly. However, it also goes for Mines, his development thing, and like his idea about why the rules in North Queensland need to be different for the rest of Australia. He calls it virgin land that's ripe for exploitation, which...
Don't say that. Don't. Robbie, this is Kieran talking. I'm trying to help you out. Don't say that.
Well, he says if you don't want to do it, they're going to have a dirtier smelter open up in China, and we don't get any jobs out of it. That's the quote again. And I think that is not the whole story, but it's compelling. It's a compelling argument to someone, I would say.
It is, and you can look at it from either no, not China, well, we have to have it. Or you could look at it from an environmental perspective, like, oh, well, if we do it here, you know, maybe we'll have better protection. So overall, globally,
you can convince yourself of that.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I don't know if it's true. I'm not gonna get into that at all.
That's none of my
business. I've heard things about how iron and shit works, and I've forgotten it, so clearly, because I'm calling it iron and we're talking about coal. But also, like, it's not, from what little I've kind of heard from Robbie Catter, it's never really been like xenophobic rhetoric. It's more like, we have these jobs, we can have more jobs here by using these extractive industries. I don't like the extractive industries, I want to be very clear with that, but it's a different rhetoric to what I think it sounded like it was going to be.
No, and I think you're absolutely right. I think it's the Catters are so focused on community and the people that they represent, in a way that I don't think many conservative politicians are. Like, usually it feels like they don't give a shit. You're the dumb bitches who'll vote for me.
Yeah.
Here you go. I'll throw whatever out from the window of my passing carriage.
Yeah.
You know?
And, like, they're rich. They're rich people, but the things he advocates for are material benefits for his constituents, and that's why they like him. Same with Bob, that makes sense. At least the portrayal that one could get from them, as well as what people say about them, as well as the election results. But he's also, like, as much as he's, like, pro-development, he's not, like, at all anti-renewables.
Okay.
Because he doesn't fall into the, like, Liberal Party way of doing politics.
Yeah.
And something that can be confusing if you're used to one specific climate debate is solar panels. Because the way he puts it, most of his constituents, especially those who live off the grid in remote areas, rely on solar power.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Why wouldn't you?
Yeah, the sun is right there.
Yeah.
You don't have to pay exorbitant fees to try and get electricity or run generators or do all of this shit.
We've been using solar power.
Yeah, he's like, this shit's great.
He just wants to let people mine the land and sell the products to overseas.
Well,
He wants large-scale change of the system that churns out youth crime, rather than necessarily more cops and punishment, but he does want punishment back. Like, when he talked about youth crime, it was a more articulate discussion on youth crime than David Christopher Foley I ever saw presenting. He really talks about, in the framing of, like, and this is why we need jobs, but it, like, identifying the issues of the kids don't have supervision from their parents because the parents are either working too much or they're not able to get medical care or whatever, whatever, and that leads to children doing what? Like he
this is because he's in touch with the community,
yes,
in theory, and that the Catters have historically been in touch with the community.
Exactly.
So it's like, yeah, you can kind of.
But he wants to steer it towards you need to get a job.
Yeah, which also seems like a very like working man's
yes
solution.
Yes, but he does want more punishment. He wants to bring back the smack, and he wants castle doctrine. So you can shoot someone who comes on your property.
Oh, fuck. God damn it.
And he does want to ensure that there's kids to punish. He is probably the most passionate anti-abortion campaigner in the country at this moment.
Damn, yeah.
And his most debased rhetoric on any issue is that one. He snaps when it comes to abortion. He stops all the sheen, all the like Robbie Catter actually talks like a human. Disappears when it comes to abortion. I mean, you remember, quick as you like.
Quick as you like.
Like, who the... But he wants to make sure those kids are born, and he wants to find productive jobs for them. And if they can't, he's going to make sure they're put to work. On the Batuta, he describes it as a school in the desert for troubled kids, where the sand is so coarse and the sun so hot that you don't even need a fence, because where are they going to go?
That is just all of those troubled youth camps throughout the USA that killed children. That's just what that is.
Yeah.
They're like, yeah, we could have run away at any moment, but we were in the middle of Arizona, or we were deep in Michigan or some shit. Like, we were in the fucking Appalachian Trail. Like, we were in the middle of fucking nowhere, you know?
Yeah, but yeah, exactly. And he describes it that way. He talks about it like a school, but he's also talking about labor, and it just, what's swimming together in my mind when he's talking about putting the kids in facilities, out in the sticks, or maybe there's stuff to do. Anyway.
I mean.
So, Bob Catter, regular Bob Catter, has said it's racist to call his grandfather Lebanese, which I don't know what that is.
What do you mean?
What the fuck is that?
Bob, what do you mean?
What the fuck is that?
Bob, where was he born?
What do you, like, well, his.
Bob, help.
It's racist to call him Lebanese? Robert's appraisal of the situation seems closer to the reality of history. We're a big family of, you know, dark-skinned Lebanese people. We were social outcasts. And that's true, but the Catter family's influence in North Queensland has created a powerful set of social outcasts. In 2016, when Carl Catter is running for the Liberal Party, Robbie Catter officially moved to debate splitting Queensland into two states. Now, obviously, that hasn't happened yet, and Robbie's influence on federal politics hasn't become fully realized, but Catter's Australian Party is pretty powerful. The Guardian described him as a potential kingmaker leading up to the 2024 state election, and this is the picture that they used in the article. Kieran, if you could just explain Robbie Catter to everybody.
Of course. Is this real?
Yep.
Is this? No, it's not.
So Robbie does talk about this, I think, in an interview, and he kind of is like, yep, Bob really wanted to do this.
Smug little face. All right, sorry. So this is a picture of Robbie Catter. We all know Robbie Catter.
I engage with people differently to my father. You know, we're different people.
I don't know who's behind him, but...
no one important.
This is a picture of Robbie Catter, and he's wearing a suit, a dark suit. He's got a tie on. The tie is navy with some red stripes. And he's also wearing a crown and a royal cape. The kind that has it's a red one with that like speckled animal fur kind of trim. Behind him is some motherfucker dressed as what I can presume is a guard, because he's also wearing a fancy hat and a cloak, and he's got a fake sword.
I didn't realize that guy had a sword.
Yeah.
Sword?
And you can see on the shoulder, this person's not in frame, but they also look to be in military garb. Robbie looks like he's done a fart in an elevator and nobody knows that it was him.
Like, he looks a little embarrassed, right?
He looks like he's getting away with something, but he also looks ashamed. Like, he's kind of like, ugh.
Like, at first it's like smug, and then it's like, oh, he's... Everyone thinks...
Little boy in a new suit for a wedding.
Exactly. It's a bit of that. And it's a marketing thing, because, like, everyone's talking like he's going to be a kingmaker.
Yeah.
The way the seeds are going to shake out. He even says at one point... And it's interesting given what we said about the Greens, but he's like, I think I'd prefer to be in the balance of power, because then I can focus issues to my electorate as opposed to having to figure out what's good for everyone. He's like,
yeah,
if the Catter Australian Party is in the balance of power, we can focus on North Queensland.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
They lose a seat in 2024. And so if there is a scary King Catter future, it's going to be put off for at least a couple of years. And that's where we're going to end our story. because, you know, it's still happening.
It is still happening.
Robbie Katter is for Australia in its original context. A colony where people are looked after, supported paternalistically by the government as they pioneer their way north into further untapped resources. Where political education is unnecessary because labor politics are foundational and everyone works together towards a common goal. The Empire's Keep.
Oh my god. Yeah, we'll be back next week. Holy shit. This is great.
That's the other Katters. I had a lot of fun researching this, and one day we'll probably do a Bob Katter episode, but definitely keep up on what they're saying. I think the thing about the Katters is that, like, they've in the background, while everyone's laughing at them, become, like, actually electorally quite powerful. And that's scary.
I mean, yeah. May a thousand blossoms bloom.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.